I'd like to offer you a text from Genesis today. It is a little long, and it's full. And the Genesis stories move pretty fast. If you really want to challenge your knowledge of Bible and history, go read the book of Genesis. It's not an easy read, but it is thrilling. And I don't know that it's great that it's the first book of the Bible, because a lot of people who set out to read the entire Bible don't ever make it because they get bogged down in Genesis. You may be one of those. Some of you are nodding. However, if you can skim through the parts that you don't understand and get through it, then the next time you go through it, you'll pick up a little bit more. But Genesis 21 is our text for today. It's 21 verses 8 through 21. Let me set it up a little bit. Abram and Sarah have been told that they're going to be the father of the nation. But they are in age 90 and 100. And so they are getting a little impatient with God about how soon that's going to happen, or if it's going to happen at all. And they probably both think that they're... Well, I think Sarah says something about Abraham being as good as dead. And you can make of that what you wish, but it's probably not far from true. Although in these prehistory kind of times that we read about in the first pages of the Bible, some things are pretty miraculous. Let's just leave it at that. This passage from chapter 21, verses 8 through 21, I shall now read. Listen to these words from the word of the Lord. The child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, playing with her son Isaac. Competitors they were. So she said to Abraham, "Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not inherit along with my son Isaac." The matter was very distressing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the boy and because of the slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do it. Do as she tells you, for it is through Isaac that offspring shall be named for you. As for the son of the slave woman," and that was the boy named Ishmael, son of Hagar, "as for the son of the slave woman, I will make a nation of him also, because he is your offspring." So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. She departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went down and sat opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, "Do not let me look upon the death of the child." And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel called Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. this, the word of the Lord for people of faith. Thanks be to God. I begin with a story. It's actually a story about a story. It happened in Dumas, Texas, at a truck stop. I was on a ski trip with a whole pile of youth, and the truck had stopped. The bus had stopped at this truck stop, and kids were inside buying drinks or candy or just looking around at things. I was with some of them, and we were just looking at items that were on the shelves there, killing a few minutes. And we found a metal ladle, a little bigger than this, but not completely unlike this one. And I was holding it and looking at it, and I remembered a story that my father had told about a boy drinking from the inside corner of the ladle like this, so that he wouldn't get anybody else's germs who'd been drinking from the main parts of it. As the story goes, an old toothless man with a shaggy beard and tobacco juice running down his chin had already satisfied his thirst. And as the young boy was desperate for a drink, he drank right up here next to the handle. The toothless man said, "Look, Ma, he drinks from the same place on the dipper that I do." And I told the kids that story. They got a little bit of a laugh. And as I got to the end of it, I noticed a man who I didn't know who was listening to my story. He was wearing a ratty toboggan, had a scruffy beard. And as I finished the last of my story, the last line, he smiled real big, showing me that he had only about 3 teeth. He got a grin out of my telling his story. And of course, my kids laughed at me. Thankfully, the man laughed at me too, and I felt about 3 inches tall. We got back into the tour bus pretty quickly and left the town that I have ever since called, not Dumas, but Dumbass, Texas. Because I overstepped my place a little bit. But the truth is, most of us don't know what it feels like to be desperately thirsty. And in our story today, Hagar and her son Ishmael were desperately thirsty and had no idea where they would draw their next drink of water. A drink of water is a vital and life-size thing when you're desperately thirsty. In the movie The Martian, some of you have seen it, one of the greatest challenges the astronaut, the stranded one, faced was recycling the minute amount of water that had been brought on the spaceship, because that was all the water that was there. It's a real lesson in conserving water. Water is vital to life as we know it. And it's no wonder that Jesus loved the analogy of living water, life-giving water. Moses struck the rock for the people of Israel in the wilderness, and water came out of the rocks when they were desperately thirsty. Water that would sustain them and give them hope for another day. It's no coincidence that Jesus spoke of himself as the rock. And he also spoke of himself as the living water, the solid rock, the foundation, and the life-giving source of water, the thing that every one of us must have. Well, Abraham and Sarah had overstepped a little bit in their anxiousness to provide a child as God had promised. They involved Hagar, the servant girl, and took matters into their own hands, so to speak, and Abraham was given a child through Hagar. That wasn't God's plan. It was Abraham and Sarah's plan, or maybe Abraham's plan, at least. But God's promise proved faithful anyhow. And before too long after that, God's promise was fulfilled, and young Isaac was born. And Hagar and Sarah's boys, Ishmael and Isaac, have been in conflict ever since. And that is why we find stories of conflict in the holiest of lands, some of the oldest of lands, Jerusalem itself. This week in the news again with a story of the Temple Mount. And guess what? The conflict directly between the children of Abraham and the children of Ishmael, the Arabs, the Muslims. No disrespect for each other's religion should be inferred on my part, because we each have our place, but we have to learn how to get along. We have to acknowledge each other and our differences and respect each other's differences. We can be invitational about our faith, but we cross a line when we become condemning of others because of theirs. I wish it was easier to explain. I don't understand it myself, but I guess the best way to put it is a part of the human condition to become competitive and to be in conflict. We see it in our classrooms, we see it in our homes, we see it in our streets, and we see it among the nations of our world. In human families, households, it's often me against my brother. But when our cousin comes along, it's me and my brother against our cousin. We unite, but we seem to thrive on having an enemy. That's not the way of God. That is the way of the world. And when we talk about love in the sense of trying to get along and share together, we're talking about God's world when we say that. But we can't seem to unite around positive causes instead of destructive ones. Maybe it's just because we humans have never been very good at sharing privileges. These people that we read about today lived in the desert, and they needed water. We all need water to sustain us. It's no wonder that Jesus Christ is called the living water. He offered that living water after which we would never thirst again. Sometimes we are to drink deeply from that water, and sometimes we are to give someone else a drink from that same stream. In the desert, a cup of water can change a life. The flask of water that Hagar found here in this desert saved their life, preserved their lives for another day, her and her son. We are called not to hoard what we have, but to give in the Master's name. Both the receiving and the giving can be a life-changing moment. Life in the dry places, the desert, that's occasionally true for us, thankfully. We don't have to live daily in the desert. But sometimes spiritually, maybe it seems like we are always in the desert. But life in dry places is a given. It's an unavoidable reality. When we're there in the desert, we have to help each other up. And the most faithful seekers go there on purpose to find God or to help others find God. Even Jesus went to the wilderness to pray. The wilderness. Sometimes we call it summer when it's hot like this. Our youth with Gabe and Amy in Clarksville this week, I guarantee you it was hot there. Today we are right in the middle between 2 weeks of mission work. Our youth and leaders this hot summer week on the soccer field is what's coming next. With kids of our community, contigo, with you, with them, showing God's love, sharing a meal, some recreation, and some teaching, and helping them learn the strategy of this popular game we call soccer. and just some time built, some time spent together building relationships. Life in the desert. Fellowship with God and one another. We're not alone. It's all good. Even Jesus went to the desert. But before him, in our text today, there is the story of going to the desert, or even more severe, being sent to the desert. Abraham and Sarah wanted a son. They took matters into their own hands. And so now we have Hagar and Ishmael. God had promised, but Abraham and Sarah thought they would help God. So Ishmael was born. And Isaac, the promised one, Sarah's son, would come along later. There would be conflict between them forever. A true Israelite, Isaac, and a half-breed. That is, according to Hebrew scripture. Conflict all of the way up to this week, where descendants of Isaac and descendants of Ishmael are still throwing rocks at each other, and worse. What a study in human conflict and behavior. We're going to get to go to Jerusalem, unless things get worse. But it's profound to notice that the name Jerusalem, Yerushalom in Hebrew, literally means the city of peace. And that city has been just about everything but a place of peace. Even when there is peace in our world, we know that it's not permanent. And it will not be until we come to the kingdom of God, where God reigns completely. For Hagar and her son Ishmael here in our Bible text for today, they are sent away in danger, deprived, and in a hot, parched, and boring, and risky place, deserted and barren. Sometimes the desert is of our own making in our lives. Life touches us. Sometimes life torches us. And always life teaches us. In the desert, life touches us. We cannot escape our human struggle, our vulnerability to each other and to ourselves. And sometimes, have you been to the desert? Life torches us. Monahan Sandhills in West Texas. They're on vacation with our daughters when they were younger. And the sand was too hot to touch. We rented those little metal saucers to surf down the hills on the sand a little bit. But the metal discs fairly quickly were hotter than the sand. Wasn't very pleasant. Sometimes life is like that. It brings the heat on. And if life touches us and torches us, we can rely on the fact that it also teaches us. Let's look again at verse 17 and following. God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of the Lord called Hagar from heaven and said, "What troubles you, Hagar? Don't be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is, not where he wishes he was, but right there where he is in the reality of the moment. God has heard the voice of the boy. Come, lift him up and hold him fast with your hand, for I am going to make a great nation of him." They thought they were going to die right there. Not only are they not going to die, but God is going to make them a great nation. And we know that that came true. Life teaches us and coaches us and brings us along. And God often provides miracle water for the last and the lost and the wayward and the weary, and sometimes that's me. Hagar is set down under a tree. She set her son down under a tree nearby, and she is a ways off now, unable to watch. She has been touched and torched, and now she is ready for God to teach her the way forward. God opens Hagar's eyes, and here's the best news. God opens her eyes, and she sees a well. Miracle of miracles. Verse 19 says, God opens her eyes and she sees a well. She goes over, fills the flask that she has, the empty flask, and gives the boy a drink. A drink that would save his life and hers. Was it the well there in the desert that was a miracle? I don't know. The well had been there, but they had not seen it. Perhaps it was seeing the well that was the miracle. Perhaps it was a change in their perspective into what they were looking for. Or maybe it was that God opened their eyes. That was the best part. That God showed them resource that was already there. In Jesus' encounter with the woman at the well, in a different century, he said to her, I will give you living water. Water for life. If we are alive and breathing, life will touch us with challenges that can torch us, burn their way through us and leave us parched and thirsty. But Jesus offers to teach us that he is that living, loving water. Our best hope is to open our eyes and see him, to see the way, to accept the gift, the miracle, to see the glistening water, and to receive a refreshing and redeeming drink.